Hey everyone, and welcome to the seventh episode of the Violet Podcast. Today I have in the studio Toby. Toby, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Toby Oridan, and I think people who are familiar with my work will know that I am the founder of Black Ballad. Mm-hmm. Black Ballad is a media subscription platform for and by Black women. So we have members that pay a monthly or annual fee to access all the content, all the discounts, the events that we run. Some events have come up like FT and Waterstones, and then discounts to Black-owned brands in our directory. Mm-hmm. And also, I've been a freelance journalist for many years, writing for like the BBC, Stylist, The Paul, Debrief Grazia, and around topics of like race, beauty standards, pop culture and feminism.
So, cool. Yeah. Toby, can I just say thank you so much for your time? It's so great to finally meet in person. Like, we've spoken via email and DM a couple of times, but we've never actually met, which is kind of crazy. So I feel like I've spoken to you over the years. So thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
No worries. So today we're going to be talking about race and faith and how that plays with Christianity. And this is a topic that is hitting quite close to home for me, because this has been... I would say a subconscious challenge for like a really long time. Yeah. And I feel like as time goes by and we aren't necessarily seeing a decrease in the racial injustices that Black people face, those questions and that conflict is coming more and more to the fore for me. So what I want to speak to you about today is how do you navigate that, and you with having Black Ballad, which is an amazing platform. If you haven't checked it out, make sure you do, especially the newsletter every Sunday. It's, I mean, you already know, it's amazing. I love reading it.
Thank you.
So, but with your platform, and you are really, really talking about the things that Black British women face and Black British people in general face. And as a Christian, how do you navigate that? How do you kind of stand firm in your faith when you're constantly reading about injustices?
I think why I stand so firm in it is firm in my faith, although like I'm talking, writing, reading about racial injustice all day, every day. It's because I think the journey that God took me on to do Black Ballad. Mm. You know, I was in journalism and I had a job, then like I lost my job, and I remember I was applying for jobs, wasn't getting anywhere. I remember like praying about it, and I was like, God, do you want me to be a journalist still? Like, I don't know. Do you want me to do this? And I remembered a ex-colleague that I had worked with at another sort of like publication. I prayed that, and then 30 seconds later, he sent me a DM and said, my new editor is going to get in touch with you. She's seen your CV and your work, and she wants to have a convo with you. So, okay, cool. Had a conversation with her. Got the job. Mm-hmm. Gave testimony in church. Mm-hmm. The next day, the job was taken away from me. I was like,
in 24 hours?
It was crazy. I remember I cried to my boyfriend, who's now my husband at the time. I just couldn't understand it. And I was like, God, like, what do you want me to do? And all the time, I kept having conversations with, like, Black women of different ages and different social circles were like, I wish there was something for Black women that wasn't American. Mm. And then...
Good point.
And then I did American studies at university, and I kept saying to my boyfriend, I wish there was something for Black women that wasn't American as well. So these conversations were happening simultaneously. Mm. And it got to a point where it was like, God, what do you want me to do? Like, what do you want me to do? And I remember I applied for a job, I didn't get it. And then I said, you know what, I'm just going to start this thing that has been burning in my soul. Mm. And everything I did towards Black Ballad, like I just had the idea... October 30th, June 2013, I launched in June 2015. So it was like June 2014, sorry. So it's like an 8-month time period. And everything I did for Black Ballad, I didn't have the money. Everything just came. Like, everything came so easy. So for me, it's kind of like, God, well, you do want me to be in it. Like, my journey is of you. Like, I didn't, and at times I've not wanted to do Black Ballad, but yet God has kept me in it. Yeah. So it's kind of that thing of like, okay, I'm reading about it every day, but for the last, you know, since 2013, 6 years, God has sustained me. God has given me a way to do things when I thought there was no way. God has allowed me to meet Black women who have been able to bring this vision to life. So it's kind of like, yeah, I'm reading about it and that's super hard, But if God didn't want me to do it, then why would he bring me on that journey? And that's a super, and I think that's just kind of the personal nature and like the personal relationship you have with God. Like, yeah, there's things that are hard, but when you think about your journey and your testimonies, you're kind of like, God wants you in it. And you know, God is a God of justice. Sometimes you have to do things that are right, even though they are hard. And we see so many examples of that in the Bible. Yeah, I'm not comparing myself to any biblical character at all. Like, I'm not trying to be like that. But what I am saying is that sometimes, like, things that we need to do that are right are not always easy.
That's very true.
And I think that, that knowledge of that, of the biblical side and knowing my journey, I think sustains me in times where are hard and times where I do feel a little bit confused about, okay, why is our community always like suffering globally? But also, you know, God uses people as vessels and tools.
That's true.
So, you know, I'm not the only one who's doing some great work, some good and great work in the community. There's so many other Black women that are doing some amazing things. So I also have hope as well. So I think that's a long-winded answer of saying why I'm able to still carry on.
No, but it's good because I guess for me, I can resonate with that because in the midst of everything that you read, just think about your life. And if we believe the word of God is true, and it says God is a good God, and I've seen his goodness, I've seen his mercy time and time again in my life, in the life of those around me. But even though these things don't impact you directly, so you're an empathetic person, and even if you're reading about a mother who's lost their son, you still feel it. You still feel it, and you just think, God, why is it always us? But then I guess even from a Christian perspective, you can say, well, you know, God isn't a God of Black people or white people. He's just a God of people. And it's not about race. And we shouldn't see our faith in this prism. But at the end of the day, we function in the world where our skin color is a factor, even if it shouldn't be. And even if you don't see it as that, that's how other people will respond to you. And as a result of some things that can happen to you, it can be a direct correlation with the color of your skin.
And also as Christians, I think for me as well, like, I just genuinely, like, for me, Black women are, like, dope. Like, I just think, like, we are the absolute ish. Like,
I mean, I love being Black. Like, I mean, who doesn't?
That's it.
Well, like, some people, actually, but, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that, like, even as a Christian, when you feel that people are not being treated right anyways, you do take on that thing of, like, how can I help? So for me, it was kind of like, okay, I felt that Black women were being really vilified in the media. I was a journalist. I didn't like it. So it was like, I have a set of skills. So how can I make this, how can I play a tiny part in making the world better for Black women?
I don't think it's that tiny, Toby. I think you're kind of understanding what you do because you've completely changed the narrative. When you look at how, I think so.
Thank you.
When you look at the way Black, I mean, not to say that Black women aren't still vilified, but at least now there's balance. We didn't have balance before. There was just one narrative and that was all it is. But now we have multiple voices and Black Ballad is providing a great platform for those voices. So we're not doing a small part, girl, what do you mean?
Thank you. So yeah, I just think as a Christian also, like, if you have a set of skills, it's also your duty to help where you can.
That's true.
And that's also a part of, like, sometimes how I do kind of get over it. I was like, well, Toby, like, you have this skill, which is writing, and I think also I hope it is also nurturing people, so the Black creators that come on board, the Black female creators. So why not do some good with it as well? So I think all those sort of things play a factor in how I can move past the daily injustices to look at the bigger picture. But, yeah.
That makes sense. So when you have conversations with people, or if you have conversations with people, let me not assume, who say things like, oh, Christianity is a white religion or it's only for white people, how do you respond? Or have you ever had something like that or an experience like that?
I haven't had those direct conversations, but I think that's because, you know, I started my Christian journey in a Redeemed church.
Okay.
So it was heavily Nigerian church. And then when I got married, I moved to a church that was much more multicultural. But I do think, you know, I used to kind of just always think about Galatians 3:28, you know, like, you know, Jew, Gentile, like, you know, we're all one. I used to think, like, that's the end of it all. But I think as I've gotten older and, like, reading the Bible more and I think also reading around the Bible more, I think I can definitely understand why there is a resistance to Christianity from some Black people. I understand, especially when we look at our history globally, whether that be colonization, slavery, I can understand where the argument comes from. But for me, it always goes back to, one, God is a God of all people.
Yes, that's
two,
true.
We all interpret the Bible differently. I think the Bible has been used and misused in ways to control systems, to oppress like whole nations. Mm-hmm. And I think you also need to have Bible in context as well in different ages. And I think sometimes that's really important. I'm not saying that the words, I'm not saying the word changes, like we know that, but you do need to apply context. And that's not to excuse also historical, righteous outrage at past historical events either. That's not to excuse mm-hmm. it. But what I can say is that I do understand why some people do, black people do look at the Bible and do look at Christianity and be like, you know what, that isn't for me. But then I always do think, also, are our churches doing enough to make sure that that Christianity is a religion or is a faith for young black people or black people in general? Mm. So I think there is a balance there that needs to kind of, I suppose, be looked at on both sides.
Yeah, I guess for me, those conversations have been had not so much in the church, but maybe in my church, for example, we do a lot of street evangelism.
Mm.
Like, that's a very, very big thing for us.
Mm.
So it would be maybe I'm evangelizing on the street or just speaking to someone. And I have these conversations and a lot of the times they are referring to some of the historical things you mentioned, like slavery and colonization. Mm. And my understanding of it is, like you said, it's been a misuse of the Bible.
Yeah.
It's been people weaponizing the word of God to fulfill their agenda. And when we actually studied the Bible, it's pretty clear of how like Christianity even came to Africa. It wasn't through colonization. It actually happened through Ethiopia.
Mm.
And that is where we have one of the oldest churches. I believe, yes, in the book of Acts, chapter 8, we talk about we read about the encounter of Philip and the Ethiopian eunuch.
Mm.
So Christianity in Africa actually predates colonialism, let alone slavery. But again, it's the fact that it plays such a huge part in it. So it almost kind of eclipses that.
Mm.
And if someone is already kind of, your first interaction with Christianity has been because of this or because of slavery or because of this, you might not even be inclined to look at the text and actually think, oh, snap. Like, Christianity actually came to Africa and to black people way before all of this happened. Mm. So that's kind of like my trump card, I guess, sometimes when I speak to people. But at the same time, if you already have this idea in your mind that Christianity is bad and Christianity is only for white people and it's just this, you're not always so willing to hear. So I think it is quite interesting when I have these conversations because I can understand why they think that because they're not wrong. It's just not the whole truth. It's not the whole truth. And like you said, what are we doing in churches? I mean, there are some churches that have great youth outreaches and there are churches that do wonderful things for the community, but the church in Britain as a whole, what are we collectively really coming together to engage these people? Or do we just try to silence them? Or do we just try to kind of put them on the sidelines and say, oh, well, they just have this idea, they're crazy, they're this. But Jesus still died for those people.
Yeah.
And those people still need to be included. Mm. And they still need to be part of the conversation. So it's like, how do we navigate that? And even if we're not talking about the church nationally, on an individual level, what am I doing? What role am I playing? How am I bringing clarity to things? But also about being arrogant, because this is my understanding and I can't force my understanding on someone else.
Mm.
So it is quite hard to balance.
It is. And I think, you know, for me, one of the hard things, maybe one of the things I was like, oh, you know, like maybe I was like, have I not been reading the Bible properly? Is that, so I was doing research for a project and I was kind of going over the story of Ham and the descendants of Ham.
Yes, yes.
And how, you know, his descendants are darker. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then you look at like some chapters in the Bible and you see that ethnicity and skin tone is associated with sin.
Mm.
And then you start to realize how
people could unsee it like that.
Yeah. Mm. And I think that is something that a story that I'm still trying to navigate myself. Like I don't even have the answers myself.
Yeah.
But when you look at how, you know, Ham's descendants are depicted, it does. I can understand why it has set a tone for why our race has been treated in the way that it has been treated and why, I suppose, some may argue that, you know, the story hasn't been manipulated. It is what it is. And, you know, some will have the rhetoric, the response that, yes, that story has been manipulated to suit a certain demographic of people.
Mm.
But I do think for me, like, when I do think of this, I do always think of the story of Ham's descendants. And it's still a story that I'm still, I suppose, struggling with in my mind to make sense of.
You and me both. Because even when we talk about the sense of Ham, it literally talks about places like Kush. And we know Kush is Egypt.
Yep.
And we know Egypt's in Africa.
Yep.
So it's not just a kind of symbolic thing. We know that this is actually true. So we can understand the reason why some people can think that. But at the same time, does it justify it? Because on the flip side, we can say, okay, well, in the book of Revelations, where it describes Jesus, it talks about his skin being the color of brass. It talks about his hair being woolly, which is not synonymous with the European version of Jesus that's often depicted.
Yep.
So we can see that, but we can also see that. And again, and this podcast is by no means to provide the answers. I don't have the answers.
Oh, I definitely don't have
the
answers.
We're both trying to navigate this. But it's a conversation that needs to be had, especially with it being Black History Month. I think it's a conversation that should be had all year round, but especially now. So when you have that depiction of Jesus, we also have that depiction of the descendants of Ham.
Mm.
Where is the reconciliation?
Yeah.
And where does that leave us today? Where we're in a post-colonial world.
Mm.
Slavery as well. Slavery in its form is no longer a thing. Obviously, there's still things like human trafficking and there's still other forms of slavery that's still taking place.
Mm.
But for the most part, it's not the everyday reality of most people of African descent. But we still have our challenges.
Yeah, I mean, even if you think about Africa in itself and like things like Libya and like how things are going on, you know, some people, like, I think also for me, it's also very easy to sit here as a Black British person, a British Nigerian person, where you don't get to see the atrocities of, I suppose, human trafficking, slavery every day. But then if you go to, you know, our own continent, there are still those ramifications. But then how do you justify that? Because that isn't necessarily white people doing it to Black people.
Black people doing it to Black people.
But you do know that it is a relic of colonization.
Yes.
And you know the people that are most likely to inflict it, especially in Libya, are those that are not
the darker skin ones. Yeah. I suppose
that's where the colorism factor comes into it.
Which is a whole nother layer.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's an extremely complicated subject. And I think as a Christian, you know, like most Christians who's a work in progress, it's still something that I need to, I suppose, ask for answers for, read the Bible more thoroughly, because reading the Bible at 29 is completely different to how I was reading it at 19, 21. And there's things that I didn't understand there that I'm only beginning to understand now.
And your understanding is just going to increase.
Yeah, and especially with the work I do. So I still know that I need to do work on that myself.
Yeah.
But then when you look at social issues, I guess it does bring it to reality of, bring the reality of how people can see the Bible as something that's not for them as a Black person.
Yeah.
But for me, I don't see it that way.
Yeah. I mean, nor do I, but I think we still need to be aware of how other people see things.
Of course,
and also
we
even
do.
Like for me, like I said, evangelism is big in my church. Also for me as an individual.
Mm.
So it's like how do I respond to these things? And I feel like we're seeing a lot of Christians or people who were formerly Christian renounce Christianity and subscribe to more traditional faiths. And we're seeing in America, but also here, the rise of Black witches and people who are subscribing to things like occultism and lots of Yoruba traditions, or I would say traditions that have roots in Yoruba culture. So we are seeing lots of people reject Christianity in favor of what they see as being Black faith or a religion for Black people. And in light of that, again, how do we respond? Or what do you think?
I think at the core of it, it's about people wanting to have a community and have a belonging. Mm. So I think it's about addressing what we previously talked about, I suppose, the misconceptions that colonization brought.
Yes.
Christianity to Africa. I think it's about understanding why do this, I suppose, mostly millennials black millennials want to gravitate towards these faiths and these spiritual walks. I think it's about understanding that. And I think there is a huge appetite to dismantle whiteness,
yes,
decolonize, you know, systems, which I think is absolutely right. So you can't then be surprised that that has now spread over, I think, into religion.
Yeah.
But I also think from reading about it, one thing that I have read consistently, and I've not read a lot, I've read like about 3 articles on this, so I'm not an expert. I think that it's about Christians who feel maybe the church isn't as accepting to them, yes, on their on yes, certain identity factors.
Yes.
So I also, I think, you know, for different reasons, different people are heading towards these faiths.
Mm.
But I do think it's a responsibility for us as Christians to look within and say, okay, what are we not giving these young black millennials that these other religions are?
Mm.
And I think also power dynamics in church also can be very, can resemble
the patriarchy and colonialism. Whiteness.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I had a friend who literally, she called me. And I'm sure from the description, you'll guess what church she was thinking about going to. So I'm sick of sitting in church with my child and not having anything and seeing pastors, black, often white, driving lavish cars and the majority of congregation being black and struggling. She was like, I'm sick of that feeling. She was like, this church, at least the pastor's black and at least he has wealth, and I see that some ministers have wealth, and it's drifting down. So I remember saying to her, I completely understand what you're saying. I get it. But I don't think that church is the church you want your child in. I don't think that church is the church that you really want to be in, from what I know.
Mm.
So what I'm saying is I think we have to assess power dynamics. And also, I think for women as well in churches, as well, like black women, I think there are just some topics that the church doesn't allow us to talk about as freely as we should be able to.
Yeah.
So as I said, like, I think it's about, you know, what are we not offering these young black millennials, in particular women? What are we not offering other identities? Are we offering people with various identity factors a home?
Mm.
Are we offering a place of non-judgment to have really candid conversations? But there is an appetite to dismantle whiteness,
yeah,
that I don't know if Christianity can actually give in comparison to these, I suppose, more traditional religions. And also, like, there is a narrative of that, you know, Christianity replaced these traditional
yes,
faiths.
Yes.
And, you know, people want to get back to their ancestors and they want to know what will their ancestors say. And I think also in the articles that I was reading, like, you know, digital community helps, digital era helps, you know, if we didn't have the internet, where would these groups start? Do you
that's
know what I mean?
True,
how
actually
would they be able to congregate? How would they be able to meet? Because if you're coming from, I suppose, typical Nigerian, you know, households that are Christian, where would you meet these other people? Where that's would true you start looking for this information?
You wouldn't necessarily want to be open about it. Well, I don't know, but I can imagine that being very difficult.
I've read that it is. I've read that it's very difficult. So I think there's various factors of why people are resisting Christianity and going over to more traditional faiths. And also, I think, as much as people don't want to say it, people are influenced by celebrities. And, like,
that's true.
You know,
and we're seeing the rise of it in pop culture so much. I mean, I know there was a time, this is just my personal belief, I know not everyone subscribes to this, but the time when, like, the term Black Girl Magic was being used left, right, and center. Mm. For me personally, I generally was like, you know what? I understand the ethos behind this.
Okay.
But I was like, I really do feel like this has roots in occultism. So it's just not a term.
Really? Okay,
for
cool
me personally,
okay,
I was just never comfortable with it. So it's not a term that I ever use,
okay,
and I never would use. And I feel like it's just this normalization of terms like that, and even like the use of crystal and the use of sage,
mm-hmm,
which, I mean, if you're Christian and you're comfortable doing it, okay. But for me personally, it just didn't, it never sat well with me. I mean,
okay,
Harry Potter doesn't even sit well with me, so that's just me.
Okay.
So for me, I feel like we're seeing it seep in, and it can be so subconscious and you don't realize how it can actually be impacting you.
Mm.
So I do feel like we're seeing that in celebrity culture, in social media, in the digital landscape.
Mm.
We're just seeing, I would call it, like, the normalization of occultism. That's
okay
how I would see
mm-hmm
it. And I do think that you could easily find yourself in a place where you're practicing spells or you're looking at astrology and you're thinking, oh, snap, how did I get here? But it's like, it was just little things. It was little things. But that's my perspective, which I appreciate it's not everyone's.
No,
but that's just how I see it.
No, I hear you. And I think, you know, different opinions make for a fruitful conversation. Mm. But I, you know, I always think it's super important to hear why and why they're turning to those different spiritual walks. Yeah. As I said, I haven't read loads around it and I'm not an expert and I, you know, it's not something that I subscribe to. But I think that that common factor of belonging and community is really important for us to understand why those people want to sit in those, I suppose, spiritual homes rather than our traditional churches.
Yeah, so I guess the onus really is on us, like you said, to address these factors and to, again, I can't even say provide answers because I don't have the answers. I feel like this might need to be a part two episode or it's just a to be continued or just throw it out to the Vala readers and to the Black Ballad readers to provide their insights as to what can be done. Like if you are a Christian, but you're not ignorant to what's going on in the world and you care about what's going on in the world. And, you know, you want to reach people and you want to share your faith with people, but you want to share it in a non-confrontational way. You want to share it in a way that you acknowledge that that's their truth and their truth might not be the same as yours, but you still want to share what you believe. Yeah. So it's just, how do we navigate this moving forward? Especially because, I mean, I know we're definitely seeing the rise of Black witches in America, but there are people in the UK that definitely subscribe to more traditional spiritual viewpoints. And we're probably just going to see the increase of it, to be honest. And it's going to become more, it probably will become more mainstream. It's like, how do we navigate? How do we coexist? How do we respect each other in these conversations?
Definitely. I think that's definitely true. And I think, you know, when you talk about import, especially like in the rise of it, like obviously, like I suppose the most I don't think blatant's the right word, but the obvious example that comes to mind pop culture is obviously that the Beyonce, you know, the goddess of Ocean.
Yes.
And you know, hold up, you know, the video where, you know, she's in the yellow and you know, the hair, it all references that.
Yeah.
But you know,
for, and it's a direct reference. You can't even look at it like, oh, is she doing this? Is she doing that? No, it was 100%
a shun. But for a lot of Black women, like seeing her do that so powerful, so I suppose justified in her anger, I suppose people look at that and they're like, oh my God, like if she's doing it, like it's okay. Do you know what I mean? And we do turn to celebrities, you know. So I think you're right. You know, I think the rise of more we see in, I suppose, entertainment and media, I suppose it lets people, it gives people an option. Do you know what I mean?
That's a really good way to put it,
I think it gives people an option. You know, it's not an option that I'm judging it, but it's not an option for me.
Yeah.
You know, so it'll be interesting, but it's also interesting to see which Christians will put their faith so front and centre as well at the same time. Do you know what I mean?
Because even as you're speaking about Beyonce, like, let me not be a hypocrite. I love Beyonce. So as much as I'm saying, like, I won't use the term Black Girl Magic, I definitely watched that video 1,000 times.
Yeah. And when you see Sorry, like, all the... like the artwork and stuff like that, like, and like when you know, like there is a lot of references to that. And when you think about Beyonce, no, I'm trying to turn this into Beyonce podcast, I'm so sorry,
it's absolutely like, fine, she's welcome here.
I'm a huge Beyonce fan, so I can't even front like I'm not, but when you see the fact that Beyonce's gone on this journey to find out who she is and her identity, she has not made no secret that through her work, I think it's quite obvious that she's explored or read around.
Oh, definitely.
Do you know what I mean?
Definitely.
And you see...
Especially in her last body of work, it became very apparent. Yeah.
But you see the shift in how her work has been so much for Black women. Do you know what I mean? So it's kind of like, oh, wow, well, if this is part of her kind of, I suppose, a journey to find out who she is, and it leads to, I suppose, empowering other Black women... I guess I can see why people see it as a more favourable option. I truly do. But as I said, like, it's just not an option that I personally would go down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unrelated, but... not that unrelated. Have you heard about the Church of Beyonce? This is a thing.
I feel like I have heard about this. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not. She's not endorsing this.
Yeah.
But it's a thing where people literally... they sing Beyonce songs in lieu of praise and worship. Sorry, I shouldn't laugh.
It's wild.
I mean, I love B. I do. Like, I don't think there's a single Beyonce album, and I'm talking about, like, the from Destiny's Child, their first album, even the Writings on the Wall. I've been a Beyonce fan for years. Yeah. like, her work is, like, the soundtrack of my life. But 100. The Church of Beyoncé, I was a bit like,
But that's the thing. Okay. I think we are in an age of, like, where people, you know, the celebrity worship is, like...
at a really strange peak.
I think that's why Kanye's allowed to do what he's doing.
You know, I haven't even engaged with what's happening just yet. So I'm going to reserve my opinion because I need to listen to... Is that an album now? I know he released something... But is that the name of the album or is it like an event? Because no, I know he was doing
the album is Jesus is King.
Okay. Would you recommend I listen to it? Have you listened to it?
I haven't listened to... I gave up on Kanye when he said slavery was a choice. I was like, bye.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, bye.
Oh, yeah, that happened. That really happened. Wow. So you just have to blot some things from your mind sometimes.
So funny, though, but Kanye was a big part of me coming to faith.
Really?
I heard.
Well, like Through the Wire times or like?
Yeah, so Jesus Walks. I remember hearing it and I really felt for the first time I heard a song that was very honest about walking, about not having perfection in walking with Christ. And I remember like at the time a lot of my friends were like, oh my God, it's demonic, this, that and the other. And I was like, can you explain why?
I never saw it as that.
And,
but then those times I wasn't really talking to God, so don't mind me.
Yeah, and I didn't feel like the reasons were good enough.
Mm.
And I think I was like, rah. I think I remember thinking like, rah, so this person can put out how they feel about Christ and like not feeling like knowing that they need Christ to overcome their trials.
Mm.
And it really felt like an honest reflection of how I was feeling in coming to Christ. And I remember I used to listen to that song because I felt like gospel music was too perfect. Like, it was too perfect for me.
But it was for a very long time. Yeah. Things have changed now.
Oh yeah,
there's a lot more openness. But it, with 10-15 years ago,
with the age of the internet, people are being exposed for being very human. Like we're all human.
Yeah.
And I just felt that I couldn't really fall in love with gospel music because it was like an air of perfection that I just knew I didn't have.
And maybe that's my feeling quite condemned by some songs. Like, yeah. I want this to be me, but it's not me.
And maybe that's my own insecurities. I don't know. But like when you're a teenager and you're trying to come to Christ, like, you know, like you, I was very agnostic in those years. Mm. There was finally someone who was very unapologetic. And also kind of very unapologetic about being a Christian. Like people need to understand that like the lines in Jesus Walk, they're unapologetic about being a Christian.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe it. So now when I see Sunday service and I see what it's all become, I do feel a little sad. I'm just kind of like...
I mean, I see people share it, but I'm always like, not ready. Like, I feel like I need to mentally prepare myself, but judging by your face, like, not much for me to look at. Or
I don't know if I'll listen to the album. I don't know.
Okay.
But,
R.I.P. Kanye of... 2000 and what was his heyday? I'd say my last favorite Kanye album. This podcast completely turned something else. But anyway,
I was about to say, like, we've really come like far. But hey, stay on the journey.
I think the last one was it My Dark Twisted Fantasy?
Which I think is his best.
Do you think it's his best?
I think
that's one of my favorites. But for me, Through the Wire is still like. Why do I keep calling it Through the Wire? College Dropout.
Yeah,
that's the name
I
of
think
album.
The College Dropout is. An absolutely brilliant album. I think between that and The Miseducation of
like,
Lauren...
What?
Yeah, between The College Dropout and The Miseducation of Lauren Hill, for me, are the two best albums of all time.
I've been glad to agree with you.
Yeah, though. But I think musically, sonically, My Dark Twisted Fantasy is Kanye at his absolute most genius. Like,
and then
like,
it all went downhill.
Like the sounds of like... That album are amazing. But look where I've taken this podcast. I'm really sorry, everybody.
It's absolutely fine. I kind of started with the segue. But I think we should wrap up here. Like I said, this podcast was by no means to provide the answers. The conversation's up to you. How do you navigate your faith in light of the social injustice that people experience? We'd love to hear from you. As always, at us, email us, DM us. This podcast is indeed for you. So Toby, tell me, where can we find you?
Where you can find me? On Twitter and like Facebook and Instagram, it is Black Ballad UK. Black as in the colour, ballad as in the song, because I know people do ballad.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
People that pitch ballad never get a response.
Okay, that's interesting.
So,
okay.
Yeah, UK. So Black as in the colour, ballad as in the song, UK, all one word.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you want to find me on Twitter or Instagram, it's I am Toby Oridan on both. Not that I don't think I'm super exciting and that, but like, yeah.
I like your stuff. People like your stuff. doesn't matter. I mean, anytime I'm saying follow me, I'm like, if you like, follow me. But I know I'm not the most active on social media. Me and social have a really weird relationship. Like, I want us to be, like, super close, but we're just not. It's, yeah.
Also, there's real life.
There is real life. And my real life is very active. And it's mine. And I don't really broadcast it on social. So, yeah. But having said that, feel free to follow me. Dami_Averaging In on all platforms. And please do follow... And please do follow Valor Magazine. Remember to rate and like and subscribe to this podcast. This podcast is for you.